Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's podcast. Before we get into it, November 25th and 26th, Thanksgiving weekend, I'm going to be headlining at Gotham Comedy Club here in New York City. So if you're in town, come see a show. And if you use a promo code Paul, you get half off the ticket. Go to GothamComedyClub.com. Use the promo code Paul, half off for tickets. Friday and Saturday night, November 25th and 26th. I got five shows. Great venue. Please come on out, hang out. We'll have a good time. My guest this week, my good friend Tom Bernard, radio legend from Minnesota, has one of the biggest, best shows, radio shows in the Midwest, and a great podcast of his own on Westwood One. Really fun conversation with Tom. We get into his history, how he, a tough kid from the streets, and made it huge as a broadcaster. Just a really, really fun interview. You're gonna love this guy. It's just a really, really great time. So enjoy it, and hope to see you on the 25th and 26th of November. Seriously, record this.
Yeah, I'm recording right now.
Are you recording?
Yeah.
Or you better introduce the show, and then we'll do the deep voice thing.
Wait,
so you get
here,
it back here. And you just...
This is Paul McCurry. Welcome to the show, everybody. I am in the Tom Bernard Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I am with the great and dear, dear friend, Tom Bernard.
I like that. Oh, wait a minute. I really like the dear friend part.
Yeah. Yes.
We're messing with the
bass.
With the bass on his microphone, yeah. So like... Hey, sure, you're right.
In the 60s, when I played in the Apollo Theater, yeah. All the white people would come and protest. And I'm like, fuck that shit, man. I'm James Brown, open an act. You can kiss my ass. Wow, I really feel black right now.
I know, I'm telling you. It's unbelievable. I'd like to do Can't Get Enough of Your Love right now.
I could get laid all the time if I could have this like in my throat and I could turn a little thing and go, hey, I'm going to fuck you right now.
Look at them titties.
Look at those titties. Don't be afraid of a white guy. Sounds like fucking James Brown. Come on now. And we're here with Mike, our man Mike, the producer. Thank you for doing this, buddy.
No problem.
Right, boy, you sound so white right now. You got to get that bass going.
I don't think there's any way to sound not white for
me. Yeah.
That's true. Norwegian, Swedish, yeah. Danish guys.
You got that pale. You got that pale thing going on.
Yeah.
I had a been here for 3 days. Tom's been on the show before, very, very good friend, and the fucking coolest guy and the funniest guy and the best radio show in the country, because you get us to say all the stuff that we say.
When I love that.
It's great. And you know what's great about today? There's not a black person in this room.
Yeah, every day.
Every it's day. Just, you're like,
I know what's where how I grew up, and it's, you know, I there's no money in it for me. I don't play the race card or any of that stuff, so I don't make money like, you know, a Snoop Dogg or Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
You know. How about Snoop Dogg, what he said about Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh, God. Tell people that they don't know.
Arnold Schwarzenegger would probably beat the shit out of Snoop Dogg, even though he's like 70 years old or whatever he is. And so he was talking about, what's the guy's name they executed? Tukey?
Yeah.
Was it Tukey Williams?
Yeah, it's Tukey Williams, yeah.
I believe it's Tukey Williams. He was in, I don't know, Soledad or San Quentin or something, and they ended up... So he was bitching because Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was governor, didn't execute some honky. I don't know who the hell it was, but he didn't execute him, and he did. He executed Tukey. And so he goes, man, I'll tell you one thing about that slut-cut, bucket-mouth motherfucker. I thought... I wonder if he'd say that to his face, you know?
That is awesome.
Slut-cut, bucket-mouth motherfucker.
It's almost, that's almost going to go up like engraved in marble, like in Washington, D.C., and put up somewhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I like that.
It's like,
I would like that to be called, hey, slut-cut, what's up?
Or you got to do it like this, though.
I was right.
Hey, slut-cut, what's up?
It's unbelievable, man. What Schwarzenegger's doing is unforgivable. I'm just telling you that. Hey, look, I'm calling you, sir, because I'm coming to pick up your daughter for a date tonight.
Wouldn't it be great if you just do that, just fuck with people constantly?
Oh, God. Do you remember the comic Otto and George?
Oh, yeah.
So for those who don't know, listen, Otto and George was this filthy puppet act, right? I always forget, is George the act or Otto?
I don't remember.
We'll just say Otto. Oh, no, Otto is the guy, George is the puppet.
Yep.
And the puppet's really fucking filthy, man, like dirty, right. Fucking blue. So, yeah, I wonder why this one stands in my mind.
Otto goes to George. Hey, George, what did you do last night? I went out on a date. Why? And he goes, oh, yeah, how was it? He goes, it was good. First date. And he goes, well, how was it? He goes, well, I tried to be the gentleman. I went up to the door. I rang the bell. The father answered the door. He said, what intentions do you have with my girl, my wife, my daughter tonight? And I said, well, to start with, I was going to have her devein my penis with a clam knife. What the fuck do you think I'm going to do? Now get that slut over here. I got shit to do. And it just is like, oh, my God, it was too much.
Would it be great? And now, for all you youngsters, Otto and George. Bring them on the Ed Sullivan Show. And nobody under the age of 50 knows who the fuck Ed Sullivan just, even is.
But. And then just lets it rip like fucking.
Just was, go.
Hey, a woman, oh, this is a time, another time with Otto and George, and the woman gets, and you could say anything through the puppet.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And like you can get away with it, right?
That's right.
And so like he goes to this woman who gets up to go to the bathroom, and the woman comes back and goes, hey, is your cunt dry? Everybody's like, oh. But everybody's like laughing because it's this cute little fucking. And he's like, Otto. And George's like, oh, Otto's like, George. And he's like, oh, it's just too much. So Tom did grow up. We've talked about this in the past, but just to kind of refresh people, grew up in a very tough, had a tough upbringing, a tough family, tough mm-hmm. neighborhood and all of that, but around a lot of ethnic people, like, but, you know.
Italians, Jews, black people, blacks. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, some French people.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, whatever else somebody is.
Yeah, but they're not. The French aren't tough.
No, my father was diagnosed schizophrenic and institutionalized when I was 10, so he was gone. But my mother was... She was a tough broad, man. I adored my mother. I miss her every day. She's been dead for 8 years now.
Would you get from her what's your
work
DNA?
Ethic? Definitely.
Yeah.
She busted her ass. I had six brothers and sisters, so she busted her ass. And I remember, honest to God, her sweating bullets figuring out how she was going to feed the kids and all that.
What did she do to support?
She was a diner waitress.
Wow, man.
I mean, it was unbelievable. Wow. One of the great stories about my mother, Plymouth Avenue in North Minneapolis, like when you saw the national coverage of the Black Lives Matter people in front of the police station, that was on Plymouth Avenue. That's where I grew up down there until I was about 13. Then we moved a little further north, like we were big time.
Right.
But nothing changed.
Pretty much a ghetto, right? Like really a tough, not
yeah,
ghetto,
it
but,
was.
Not ghetto, but like.
Yeah, a ghetto in Minnesota is different than a ghetto in Detroit. Yeah, no question. True. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, exactly. The boats are smaller. They're like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, poor is poor.
Yeah, that's
the whole deal there. But my mother worked at a place called Kilroy's on Plymouth Avenue and Emerson in North Minneapolis. And my sister and I were at home watching TV one night.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going live now to Kilroy's Cafe in North Minneapolis on Plymouth Avenue. There's been a murder. And just as they cut, my mother comes out the front door with her coat over her head.
Jeez.
And I looked at my sister and said, hey, I think Mom killed somebody. But she was just, she didn't want her face seen on camera.
Yeah.
She got her coat over her head. I think Mom killed somebody. I'm not sure.
Like that night, you were very respectful of your mother.
Oh, yeah.
I have a murdering mother on my hands.
But we joke, you know Dave Mordahl.
Yeah.
Dave Mordahl, great comedian. He had a great TV show called Recreation Nation. Mm-hmm. I think it only lasted one season, but he was really good. He's a very, very funny guy and a great guy.
And he's on your morning show, KQRS Morning Show.
He absolutely is. Uh-huh. And he does an impression of my mother because they go, hey, is anybody going to the Twins game? Where are we going to get Twins tickets money? Because my mother said that about everything.
Seriously.
Where are we going to get school tuition money?
Oh, wow.
Because we had no money at all, but she busted her ass. And yeah, I learned how to work hard from her.
And then when did that change? When you started to do well, I mean, I assume you took care of her because, you know, very generous.
I wrote my mother a very large check when I was 27 years old. And she, you know, she was, I think, 60. She must have been 62.
Yeah.
And so for the rest of her life, she lived, she did whatever she wanted,
whenever
she wanted. It was one of the great joys of my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because for me, and I, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's all with the money. Well, again, I make a nice living and all that, but the money's great, but it's not what drives me.
Can I have a car?
Certainly.
Sometimes if you ask, Mike, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like you suffer. Yeah, you don't work at all.
Meanwhile, we're carrying old gear out of his trunk of his car to resell it on eBay for $6. Hey, what the fuck? What are you, a Jew?
That's my son wants to do that. My son Andy is going to.
No, you are. He's a very, very generous guy, and we've golfed at your country club, which I love because there are no minorities there.
It's unbelievable.
There's one Mexican guy. I'm like, get rid of that guy, and you did.
And he was gone.
And
Paul said, "You got to go. I'm sorry. It's time for you to leave, man."
And it was great.
And so did you... Where in that, of the six, are you the oldest, the young, I forget?
I'm right in the middle of seven kids. Yeah, I have an older brother, two older sisters, and then three younger brothers.
Right. And then we'll talk about other stuff, but just so, to catch people up, you sort of, the radio thing happened. You were with Tom and Dan. You were a team, right, at one time?
Yeah, matter of fact, April 17th is my 30th anniversary of being on the KQ Morning Show. But for some reason, and this I think I got from my mother as well, when I was 18 years old, never finished high school. I went to college for one day, couldn't find a place to park, so I quit. That's a true story.
That's awesome.
That's a true story. I said, fuck this. There's nowhere to park. I'm like, not that I had a car, by the way, but there was nowhere to park, so fuck it.
Yeah, I couldn't park my bike anywhere, so I'm saying, fuck it.
Exactly, which I stole. That was an old Where's a kid from North Minneapolis? That, what does he get for Christmas?
Right.
Your bike. it's a great old neighborhood deal.
Oh, that's awesome.
But... So I don't know how it happened to me, but we were talking about Hubbard Broadcasting earlier and the things that they do. And I walked over there. My friend Andy Fisher gave me a ride over there. And I walked into the place, 18 years old, and I said, you should hire me. And they're like, to do what? And I said, be on the radio.
But did you have any inkling that you wanted to do radio?
From the time I was 14, 15 years old, I knew that's what I wanted
to do. It's interesting. Bob Costas tells a story.
Love Bob Costas.
Yeah, he's great. He was like 10 or 11, and he would lie in bed at night with a transistor radio. This is when they had transistor radios.
Yeah.
And listen to Cardinals games. He's a St. Louis kid. Mm-hmm. And he was more enthralled with the voice of Jack Buck and the announcers than he was the game and how they were able to paint on the radio the picture of the game and theater of the mind. And that's, and he said, I got hooked. And was for you, was it just hearing these guys riffing on the radio? Because you're such a great conversationalist.
Saying whatever they wanted to say. That's why I kind of carried over, and you and I have talked about this as well. Most radio shows now, or even podcasts for that matter, will not get involved in anything racial, even if it's all positive.
Yeah.
Well, because I don't want to talk about race at all.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, they're afraid they're going to lose viewership and sponsorship and all that, listenership and sponsorship, right?
Well, it never happened to me, so what the hell?
Yeah. So, well, people are afraid of you because you're a white guy with a hood.
That's right. That's very true.
He's got very nice sheets, though. He's a
They're
Egyptian cotton. But it's from similar. I grew up in a tough Italian neighborhood. You grew up tough neighborhood. And I think that there's sort of that. I don't know. There's that comfortability with being honest about race and that.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, we called WAPs, Dagos. We used to say faggot. What are you, gay? Why don't you want to come to the play football? Like, we'd say stuff like that, which you can't say now.
Right.
In proper circles and whatever. But the nice thing is you can't say it on your show. And, like, but so you're 18 and you felt like, okay, that's a place where I can talk the way I talk with my friends.
Yeah, and it was basically a defense mechanism, I realized years later. I didn't know it at the time, but North High School in Minneapolis was a pretty tough high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you could get from getting the shit beat out of you is make them laugh.
Mm.
And the key to that was never get anybody to laugh at them. Because as long as they're laughing at everybody else, nobody's ever going to laugh at them because then you're dead.
Yeah.
I mean, so I learned that very young, that if I could bullshit my way through life,
Same thing with me, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, and you become like everybody, the jocks, the nerd, everybody kind of likes you because you're the guy that's making everybody
laugh.
That's
exactly right.
Right. And it wasn't like I'm going to do that consciously. I would watch like The Tonight Show and I would love watching stand-up and I'd go in and then I'd like watch... I'd see Rodney Dangerfield and I'd go in and they knew I was doing Rodney jokes, but I would do them and they'd be laughing and they just thought it was... And I think that there's something, and I didn't plan on doing this, obviously, but then it changed. But I think at the early on, you get that thing, and it's like, wow, you know.
And it just stays with you completely. Like today, as an example, I played golf today. And on the 5th tee at Golden Valley, there's a couple of side streets. It's that happens that tee's right on the corner of two streets. And these people came by on these recumbent bikes, and they all had, for some reason, these massive helmets on. You know, recumbent. They're laying back.
And you're only 3 feet from the ground.
And you're 3 feet from the ground. And they're all wearing the spandex, and they got the jerseys on and all the rest of it. So just to fuck with them, because, you know, what you do and what I do, I walk over the fence. I go, hey, when's the jugglers showing up? The guy looked at me like, fuck you. And I say, hey, come on, man, let's get... It was a joke. But they looked like a circus act,
right,
for Christ's
sake. But you can't say anything to anybody about anything anymore.
No, I know.
Like, I did it. I'm here at the Rick Brunson House of Comedy, and...
Great place, by the
way.
Yeah,
it's really great. Yeah,
Rick is as good as it gets.
He really is. And he's a pain in the ass to golf with because he never shuts up when he hits a good shot.
Well, he's really good.
Yeah, I know.
Damn good golfer.
Are you ever going to golf with me again? I know I'm not great, and I feel like I slow
you down.
Yeah, like
I am, right?
No, I just don't want you to, like I want to golf with you, but I feel like you're worried that I'm going to, like, slow you down a lot or
you're
stuff.
Not going to slow me down. Hey, look, here's my whole golf career. I golf with these two huge guys, Kendall Norberg and Kevin Osgood. They're huge guys. Mm-hmm. Kendall's one of the strongest human beings I've ever met.
Football
right?
players?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Hit it a mile, the whole deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, after every hole, they just don't even look at me. They just go, would you have a triple? No, I didn't have a triple, you asshole. I think you did. I'm like, well, I didn't. I don't care. I think you did. And that's just the way it goes.
And then, and then you start a fight in your own country club. That's a good thing.
I want to come to New York and eat at Maialino with you at the Gramercy Hotel and go play golf. You're a big shot. You can get me on some. You can get us on some big time. Mm-hmm. You know where I want to go is Deepdale, and then and harass Tom Brokaw the entire time I'm there.
Just you're Tom Brokaw.
One of the greatest Tom Brokaw. I used to come on the KQ Morning Show all the time. I'd interview him because I love interviewing people, just like you do.
And you're so good. It's not an interview. It's a conversation.
It's a conversation.
No, you really are. Really, it's just it's. And I'm not saying that because you're here. Like. We were talking about this, like, give me five questions before you come in.
I
and
hate that.
You can't say this and you can't say that. And, you know, you go in and you look at you go in and you sit down at whatever it is, 8:30. Next thing you know, it's 10 o'clock and it felt like 5 minutes. And you, that's why I always say to you, this show should be syndicated nationally.
Yeah.
So you have more people who hate you. Because it's just the people in Minnesota.
One of the greatest things I love is whenever anything goes wrong, like somebody leaves the show or whatever. I get attacked on social media, and people are going, God, they're really going after you. I said, half the people in the state hate my fucking guts, and they have since I was 18 years old. I don't give a shit, you know?
But don't you think that's the key to your success?
There's no doubt
about
it.
You either leave them hot or leave them cold, but nowhere in the middle, right?
You have to be polarized or you're never going to get big.
Now, I'm not a big fan of yours, but there are some people. What is it that you do that you think pisses people off on a regular basis?
Because I'm very honest. People don't like honesty.
You also like pushing buttons.
I do like.
And
yes,
I do too.
Like doing
my that. Mother does too. Like you like sort of poking the. You would be a great stand-up because you're counterculture in a lot of ways.
That's true. Like this today again. I'm meeting my friends. There's this kid standing on the corner, and he's got really long hair. He's probably 25 years old. He's got very long blonde hair, and he's looking at me, and he keeps looking at me. I go, "Hey, Bon Jovi, what's up?" What? I said, it's a joke, for Christ's sake. But that's what we did. I grew up with great guys, had a great group of friends, and we were just busting each other's ass constantly.
Yeah, but that's a sign of affection. I want to show you a picture from the show last night, right? So there's a guy in the audience, and we start talking, and one thing leads to another, and it's this guy, right? Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Tattoos, really skinny, like a white guy who wants to try to be black. So I have him stand up, and I go, how's the crystal meth lab?
There you go.
And the place goes, ugh. I go, what? I go, what? Well, do you think this guy's a fucking brain surgeon? What do you think this guy is?
That's why I love you, man. That's why you and I are such great friends, do that shit.
Right, but it's honest, because then I said to him, well, what do you, I goes, no, man, and he knew I was joking, and he had one wandering eye, like, this guy was a mess, right? But he was a nice guy, and I go, well, what do you do? He goes, well, I have several jobs, and then I turn to him, I go, was I right or was I right? When a super skinny tattooed guy says I have several jobs. And there is this inability to talk honestly, for people to handle honest conversation with people, mm-hmm. right? And I guess that's sort of the big thing about your show is you're the guy that I feel like says the things that people say behind closed doors, and you just don't care.
No, I do not care. And, you know, it's interesting because some of your bigger named entertainers get pissed off at me because I go after everybody. But they don't understand, and I try to explain to them that if I'm after I've met you like three times, if I'm still nice to you, it means I don't fucking like you.
Yeah. Yes.
You know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the same way.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, great to see you. How's it been?
No.
Fuck that.
No, I don't see him for like 6 months or a year, and it's like, hey, fuckface. Like, it's like, oh, look who walked in. Jesus Christ. Like, it's like great. It was like we saw each other yesterday.
Yeah, and it always will be that way.
Yeah, and that doesn't happen a lot with people, and I think, you know, you're an extension of the comedy community or vice versa, like, and I feel like it's necessary for the comedians to...
where everybody's so on guard for PC. I had this thing happen last week. I was at a casino over in Connecticut, Foxwoods, and I'm fucking around with people like I like to do, and this woman comes up to me afterwards, like a middle-aged woman. She goes, I really enjoyed your show, and I love how you interact in improv.
But.
And I'm, yeah, here it comes. And I'm like, what? What is it, you fucking whore? She goes, I'm so glad you didn't make fun of people with Down syndrome.
What?
Right, and I go, what? She goes, well, I have a child with Down syndrome, and I'm glad you didn't do that. I go, well, is he here? I go, because I didn't see anybody. She goes, no, no. I go, well, why would you think that I would randomly make fun of people with Down syndrome?
Exactly.
Like, she was literally...
Never got it.
I mean, you know, I said to her, I like all retards, and especially the ones that drool on themselves. No, I said to her, I engage those people because nobody ever really talks to them, and they avert their eyes, and they treat them like they're broken, and they're not.
I will give you an example of why Paul and I get along so well, because there's a kid from Minnesota, hockey player, got hurt on the ice, and he was, for a while, a quadriplegic. Now, he said he has some sensations back, but this is a kid that has to blow in a tube to, like, to turn the wheelchair left or right or whatever. So we have him on the show, and he's like, what is he, 18 when it happened, 17?
Yeah, he was a senior year of high school.
Nicest goddamn kid you'd ever want to meet. Mm-hmm. But everybody's walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. So he comes on the show, and I'm looking at him, and he goes, what? I said, what do you mean, what? He goes, you're looking at me weird. I said, well, it's because you're a douchebag. Because nobody else would say anything like that to him. But you know what? He now felt like a human being, being treated just like everybody else, just what you're talking about doing, which I love.
It happened at a club in Hartford. I go on stage, and there's a guy... I think it's MS. He's in a full, the tube and the neck, the whole nine yards, right? And he's with three other guys. And I'm like, okay, well, this is like a guy's night out.
Right.
So I immediately start talking to this guy in the wheelchair. Because I know nobody fucking talks to him or even looks at him when they come out.
Exactly.
And so, and you could feel everybody's sphincter get tight, like when I start. Like, just don't talk to him. Go, come. It's, we don't know how to handle it, right?
I know.
So I go, what's going on? He goes, what do you got? He goes, I got MS. I go, yeah. I go, you know, I've always been curious about this. And I really meant this. I go, can you get a hard-on if you have MS?
See?
He goes, damn straight.
Well, you educated
people. And I was off and running. He loved it. I go, you drink a beer, right? I go, what are you, a pussy? You want to do a shot? He goes, yeah. So I got him a shot of Jack. I go, now don't use the excuse of MS and spill it all down your tube and shit and start choking in my show. He does a shot, and then and now he's like fucking loving it. And then the end of the story is he had a shawl. I guess your central nervous system gets really cold or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Yep. Your butt. So, yep. And the shawl had like a ratty. It was ratty and had a hole at the bottom of it. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on with your shawl anyway? He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, it looks pretty shitty and there's a hole. I go, what happened? Like, you, because the wheelchair had the big wheels and then the two little wheels in the front. I go, well, you roll in your wheelchair and the small wheel hooked the shawl and made a hole. He goes, absolutely. So I said to his friends, I go, you cheap fucks. He goes, what? They go, what? I go, there's three. You can't go to Marshall's and collect like $10 a piece and fucking buy him a fucking shawl. So there's a guy down front with cowboy boots on, and I make him take one of his cowboy boots off. And I walked around the club and I collected money for the guy and I fucking dumped it on his shawl so he could buy himself a shawl.
Well, see, but you treated him with respect.
Right. And those guys remember that. He came up after. He's like, I'll come back every time I see you. It's not putting a pat on myself on the back, but like I think it gets to that larger thing that we've been talking about off the air and on the air the last couple of days on your show about the whole PC thing, and like,
it drives me nuts,
and people don't understand that it's making things worse instead of better.
No question.
You know,
because everybody's special now.
Yeah,
it's like, fuck you, how are you special? What do you do?
Right
You know what I mean?
Did you ever, so you have to grow into anything. You start when you're 18. Well, did the guy give you that job at 18?
Yeah, I literally called him 83 times. I did. I just kept bugging the shit out of him. So I ran the Jesus tapes, you know, on Sunday morning. That was hooking.
You?
Yeah. Oh, which I almost caught fire.
You?
You?
Don't they do some kind of a background check?
One of my favorite radio stories about a friend of mine, same story, he's playing the Jesus tapes on a Spanish station. And he doesn't speak Spanish, right? But he's just playing the Jesus tapes, so they don't give a shit. The guy's like, whatever, you don't speak Spanish. Who gives a rat's ass?
Yeah.
But in radio, it used to be when it was taped on reel to reel, it would be called Tales Out. So he ran the show backwards for the first 10 minutes because he couldn't tell the difference, right? And then he gets it turned around, so he's playing it. Now it's going forward, and it's actual Spanish instead of backwards. Yeah. And the show ends, and at the end, there's this other talking bullshit. But he doesn't know the show's ended because he doesn't speak Spanish. So the general manager, and this kid was from New York. Oh, just a great fucking guy. So the general manager comes and says, what are you doing? He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, the show is over. He goes, what a fucking guy never said adios.
Never said adios.
He never said adios. I thought it was over when he said adios. Oh, fuck. It was just the greatest.
And it's like, you can't do any of that anymore. And so you're 18.
Yeah.
And you get it. And now are you trying? You must be like, oh, I don't want to be playing these Jesus records.
No, I did it for like 2 weekends. He said, well, you know what? You want to fill in on overnights, weekends? So this guy named Steve Hatley, I adored this fucking guy. He's just a great radio legend. Mm. Died in a motorcycle accident many, many years ago. Terrible. But he says, okay, I'll sit there with you when you do the first one. The reason that happened, by the way, I'm there. I'm running the Jesus tapes, but our consultant, I don't even know if there are radio consultants any longer, but it used to be consultants. Well, in any business, I suppose.
Yeah.
The consultant was coming in, and so they said, you have to come in to the consultant meeting because, you know, everybody who's even if you're just running the Jesus tapes, you have to be there. I said, okay. Mm. So I sat there. And the consultant was very prim and proper. He's like, Mr. Businessman, and we're going to make a business out of this radio show of yours. And I said, well, I run the fucking Jesus tape. And I said, fucking Jesus. And he didn't like that at all. He got really, I said, I didn't mean fucking Jesus. I said, the fucking Jesus tapes. There's a tapes at the end of it. I'm not talking about Jesus. I'm just talking about the tapes.
Right.
But he, so Hatley said, we got to put this guy on the air because he's fearless.
Yeah.
And I was, I don't know why.
Well, that's because you grow up without a father in a tough situation. Yeah. You're 18, but you're probably 30 in terms of life experience.
True.
You have a mother. You probably work. I think you told me you were working as a kid and teenager.
Started when I was 11. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. What kind of jobs?
I was a janitor.
Yeah. You?
Oh, I was really good at it too. Let me tell you. Hey, you know, see old Don Rickles? Yeah, he'd get you a mop in a bucket.
Don't you think that, like I live in New York City, and my son, I think when you like, not that he doesn't have a hard life, but when you see a city. In that environment, you kind of are a little more mature than kids that don't. And I think when you live a life like yours, you're more mature than an 18-year-old.
Yeah, I think that's true. But by the same time, like Mike is from Wilmer, Minnesota, the engineer today on the Paul Curio show, which is available on iTunes. So I did a little commercial. He's from a smaller town, and I don't know how to communicate with small town people. I don't.
Why?
Because I
just talk about tractors and fucking your sister.
I suppose. And it's not that they wouldn't get it. That's what it's just a different
because you're so like fucking on like right in your face with your opinions and stuff. You mean like they're more like
Yeah, I mean Mike, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a thing called Minnesota Nice, which I talk about in my act, which freaks me out. Everybody, not you, but everybody's fucking smiles here all the time, and I say nobody's that happy.
That's just stabbing you in the fucking back.
Yeah, exactly. And they're passive aggressive. That happened to me at the airport.
Oh yeah.
The first time I got to the airport, everybody's smiling. I'm like, is this like Stepford Wives? Like, hey. And this woman was completely a fucking asshole. Like, I couldn't find baggage claim, and the people from my plane, everybody was like walking that direction, and I go, can you tell me where baggage claim is? And this literally happened. Like, she goes, oh, yeah. And he's smiling. I'm like, this is fun. I'm going to punch this woman in the fucking twat. I'm like, hey, you see those people walk? She goes, you see those people walking in that direction over there together? That was the word. Like, it was like... like a big like fuck you instead of like where I grew up, the Italian neighborhood, they'd be like, hey, fucking asshole, douchebag, see those idiots walking over, that's you, you cocksucker, now go. Like,
that's
that would
it.
Be it.
I love that. That's why you and I get along.
Right.
When I was 25 years old, I started doing voiceover. So I don't know where I got the balls to do it, because all of a sudden I decided, I'm gonna start doing commercials now. So I'd be on airplanes flying to L.A., Chicago, and New York, I lived in New York for a while doing voiceovers, as a matter of fact. But at 25, I get on an airplane, and I fly to New York, and I sign with Don Buchwald.
I'm with them as a commercial. They're my commercial agent.
There you go. Yeah. It's
a big commercial agency.
A few years ago. But they signed me. I got very lucky, and they signed me. And so I take them out to the Palm, too, up on, was it First Avenue?
Yeah.
Is it First Avenue? First Street?
It's First Avenue, but
First Avenue. It's like, they moved it?
Yeah, they moved it a little more west, but in that same neighborhood.
So we go there, and I'm, having a great, I'm 25, so I'm ordering everything.
And you're paying.
And I'm paying. And we're drinking, great wine and shit, and I'm having a ball, so I'm I'm pretty lit up at the end of the dinner, and I've got three agents with me, two women and a man. And we walk out of the Palm 2, and I look around, and like I said, I'm kind of lit up now, so that me's really coming out now.
Oh, yeah.
And there are all these people walking up and down First Avenue. And I looked around and I go, Jesus fucking Christ, you people are short. Because they are. They're all like fucking 4 feet, right? And one of the female agents looks at me and goes, you're a barbarian. I said, if I'm a barbarian in New York City, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, that's pretty. You've really established yourself. Really.
But that same day, again, 25, from Minneapolis. Yeah. First time I was ever in New York that day. So I'm walking Times Square, right in front of Roy Rogers Chicken. Remember where that used to be?
Oh, yeah.
Right in front of Roy Rogers Chicken. Two things happen. A black man and a black woman get in an argument. She punches him right in the goddamn mouth and knocks him down. I'm like, whoa. A little bit of home there. That's good.
It's my kind of place.
So I'm kind of looking down at the ground because I don't know anybody, and I'm just kind of wandering around New York City. And I see these running shoes with hairy legs. And then a little further up, I see the bottom of like a blue chiffon dress. I'm going, why the fuck's that woman have such hairy legs, right? And I look up further, and the guy's got a beard. So there's a guy with a beard wearing a blue chiffon dress with running shoes.
And you're like, Dad.
No, exactly. But here's the deal. I look at him, and he doesn't have any arms. So I realize some
this
fucking asshole.
Better and better.
They put the dress on the guy. Right? So I don't know if he wants to wear the dress or not.
I don't want to wear the dress. What are you going to do? Put your arms out?
Exactly. The guy with a beard, wearing a blue chiffon dress, got no arms. I'm going, this fucking place is unbelievable. I love New York City. I absolutely love it.
Why didn't you ever live there?
I did. I didn't. I lived on 20th Street and 2nd Avenue.
For how long?
Oh, 5 years.
And were you doing radio there?
No. I had gotten out of radio and got into voiceover because I don't know why again, Paul, but it just... My career took off.
Well, you have a great voice.
It's a weird voice, yeah.
No, it's not weird.
I got it from my mother, by the way. This is my
is it
mother.
Your mother's
it
voice?
Is. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Tommy.
Come over here. It's time to breastfeed. Ma, do it. It's good for you.
It's good for you. Hey, hello. My mother would answer the phone like this. Hello. I was like, what the hell? But I don't know. The whole deal. I got really lucky. Or else people
were you doing
just,
national voiceover
oh, yeah,
campaigns?
I did. Matter of fact, the 1984 Olympics, so I would have been, you know, like 32 years old. My voice appeared on the Olympics more than any athlete. I was doing Sears and McDonald's. And
Do one of the spots for me. Do you remember one of them?
Fuck no. I did like 8,000 spots.
So have you trained your voice to
no.
be like this? This has always
no.
been like this.
This is my mother's voice. I'm not kidding. I got my voice from my mother.
Well, you have her vagina.
Yes, I still have that. Indeed. I kind of gave up on the penis thing. Thanks for that, Paul.
But when you're doing the radio,
yeah.
were you day one like this fearless, or did you grow into that sort of like, I don't give a fuck, this is who I am?
I just didn't give a shit. That first time I was on the air, I was talking about Steve Attlee. He sits down with me. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm doing my first break. I said, how do you want me to do it? He goes, do it like this, da-da-da-da-da. I said, okay, because all I had to do was read a line, or it wasn't any ad-libbing or anything like that.
Who's Steve Attlee?
Steve Attlee was our midday guy at KSTP AM radio back in the day. Mm-hmm. Legendary guy, just a phenomenal human being. Mm-hmm. So I go, okay. He goes, okay, you're on. I turn the mic on and I do this break. I said, so what did you think of that? And he goes, it was fucking great, but you put the mic in audition. So nobody heard the goddamn thing. And so it was just a great start. I honest to God, it was the only thing that I got in trouble for. We used to play carts back then, these plastic carts you would plug into a machine, and that's how the commercials ran and all the rest of it. And one misfired, and you have to understand, I was a kid. I was 18 years old, so I didn't know any better. The cart wouldn't work, so I got pissed off and punched it. So the fucking thing.
That's perfect.
It just shatters.
Production 101.
And Attlee comes in and he goes, what the fuck are you doing? I said, well, it didn't work.
Oh, okay.
She's going, oh, okay.
Well, you know who has a similar story to Larry King?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Have you ever interviewed him?
Never.
Do you want to?
I love Larry King. I think he's...
Let me try to... I had he and Sean King on, and man, he's one hilarious bastard.
He can tell stories.
Oh, and he was living in New York, a kid in Brooklyn, liked radio, and just decided he wanted to do radio. He started hounding... a guy about getting on, getting on, getting on, and then fucking finally say, okay, fine, we'll put you on at night. Same thing.
Yeah.
Ends up in Miami. He ends up in Miami, and he has a great Frank Sinatra story.
Oh, but with Jackie Gleason?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
you
a
tell,
great story,
you
tell, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's working in radio in Miami, and Jackie Gleason used to come on once a week. Mm-hmm. And I, by the way, I love Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
I just, oh, my God, what a talent.
Yeah.
Just tremendous.
Yeah. So that's a guy now that they would try to put in a box and
don't do that
and put the cigarette down.
He used to threaten to punch his wife on his TV show. To the moon, Alice. Alice, I'll tell you something.
I should bring that up in my act. That's a good point.
Oh,
you lived at a time when you could threaten to punch your wife, and it was and that was a punchline.
Hey, that's
family, family sitcom.
I'm literally
it was a family sitcom.
And I'm going to say that tonight on the air.
There you go.
I am. I'm fucking going to do it, and I'll tell you how it goes.
Oh, and remember, whenever Norton would act up, he'd go, Norton, you are a mental case. That's what he would say to him. Everybody's, They thought it was hilarious. But Jackie's going to be on the Larry King show. One weekend, he goes, you know what, Pally, I can't make it this weekend, so I'm going to send a friend over. Mm-hmm. He goes, oh, you can't make it. I love having you on, Jack. And he goes, well, I can't make it this weekend. I'm sending a friend over. Mm-hmm. So Larry King's waiting around. This guy's 15 minutes late or whatever. He's like, and he doesn't know who the hell it is. All of a sudden, in radio, a light in the studio lights up when somebody's at the exterior door. Obviously not going to put a doorbell in there. A light lights up, right? So Larry answers the door, and there's Frank Sinatra. And that was the first time he interviewed Frank Sinatra because Jackie just teed the whole thing up for him.
Yeah, and I what happened was he said that Frank owed Jackie a favor because Frank was doing was part of a big show in New York, live show, I think out of the Ed Sullivan Theater, and he got sick. He got laryngitis or something.
Yeah.
And he called Jackie up and said, Jackie, can you go do this for me? And he goes, okay. He goes, I owe you. He goes, I owe you, Pally. He goes, all right, someday. And goes, that was the favor that he cashed in for Larry to get him in. And he said he talked to him for hours. And it's funny. There's always something with you guys, especially in radio, where you sort of hear that thing, and it's like, that's where I got to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think any of us know what it is either.
It's no, just and kinda, he had to find it, you know?
Yeah.
And I can remember, because I grew up, my mother had very bad hearing, and she would love to listen to talk radio at night and read.
Oh, yeah.
So everything was blaring because she couldn't hear. So I would fall asleep listening to Larry King, you know, Paloma, they're on, you know, Queens, New York. Yes.
I loved it.
That whole thing. And then she would watch the David Susskind show.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And for those of you listening, not going to know, but look him up on YouTube. And I would watch him just... Two guys in a chair, gray-haired guy, and I remember he interviewed a guy who was a hitman for the mob.
Oh, yeah.
Two episodes, big fat guy comes in a black suit with a hood on.
Would you call him a fat guy to his face? This big fat fuck comes in.
A plus-size man. And interviewed this guy for two episodes about how he kills people and why. It didn't you know, do anything to the voice, just had a hood on.
Right.
And he talked to the guy. And
I remember that.
And I remember being a kid and watching that. And there was something about talk, like, just, I don't know what it, I don't know, it just grabbed me, you know?
That's where podcasting needs to get to.
Yes.
Because that, this is the general, well, Mike, you're 31, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so 31, let's say 31 on down, they don't listen to much radio.
Mm.
You know, they're going to, so podcasting, digital's going to have to take that space over because, I mean, Mike, do you ever listen to talk shows? Like, if you're up late at night, do you go to a podcast and listen to a talk show?
Just listen to podcasts.
Right. That's what your generation is going
to
do.
And you'll listen to long form. They'll listen to a half hour to an hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it's human contact that your generation doesn't get. There's a lot of gaming going on and a lot of that kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And the human contact, we're kind of losing that. And I think that's why it's so easy for these goddamn politicians to get us to hate one another. This guy hates you because you're this color or you're this orientation or you're this religion. It's really easy to tee everybody up because there's no human contact like that.
Wait, anymore. So you're saying through these mediums of podcasts and social media and whatever, you can pit people against each other and nobody's really talking?
No. I'm saying the politicians can do it and the, you know, look, I mean, Snoop Dogg, like we said, slut cut, bucket mouth motherfucker. He can badmouth Arnold Schwarzenegger. Why does he do it? He plays the race card because Snoop Dogg makes money doing that.
Yeah.
those people, Hillary Clinton, makes money playing the race card. Mm-hmm. That should not be allowed in America.
Right.
And I think if people did have human contact, like the My Show had the first woman on it, had the first two black people
Wait,
on
the
it.
First female co-host or host?
Major character, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, like I said, April 17th, I'll start the show 30 years ago, so it was a long time. I mean, in this market, no Jews, no blacks, no women. I mean, the women would come on and go, well, here's today's cooking tip. Mm. And it wasn't, it was not like that.
And you want a woman that goes on, man, my vagina is itchy. That's the kind of woman.
Unbelievable.
Woo, I am on fire down there.
Yes.
Like, how many times do I tell myself, one black dildo at a time? Jesus.
Yeah. I just think that what you're talking about, that you're up in the middle of the night by yourself, and you are lonely, whether you know it or not, and all of a sudden there's a guy on television or on talk radio like Larry King, and you feel like you're involved in the conversation.
Especially in my car at night driving. That's all I will listen to in the car.
You guys don't really have that yet.
Oh,
you know?
There's no like a person, you know, like Larry King. Like, right. You just turn on any place you are, and they'll be there. It's not like you have to, like Rush Limbaugh is syndicated, but he's no one, you know, you don't sit down, relax, and listen to Rush Limbaugh.
No,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You usually sit there and throw shit at the radio.
You turn it on with the ironic, like, oh, let's see what he's got.
But there are talk shows out there just because there's not a name. Like, is it because there are too many other distractions with social media and gaming and whatever else that you 15, even 20 years ago, you pretty much had some cable stations and some radio stations. You didn't have Sirius XM, so there weren't as many distractions, maybe?
Right. Well, and that's probably very true. There are so many choices now. I think you and I talked about this a couple of days ago, that back when the Beatles first appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was a variety show on Sunday nights, 70 million people tuned in.
Yeah.
Sunday Night Football now, which is being on the same time slot as Ed Sullivan was on back in the day, they're by far the biggest television show of the year, and they draw about 24 million people because there are so many choices now that you're just never going to attract. Mork and Mindy used to do 60 million an episode. 60 million people. All in the Family. Norman Lear. You've had Norman Lear on,
yeah. We talked about All in the Family. He said it.
Oh, that's right. You and I talked about that.
Some of the biggest episodes of All in the Family. 60, 70 million. They go to in New York. They go to the bathroom, and it would change the water table. No joke.
What?
He also tells the story of how, the Carol O'Connor came up with Archie Bunker. He came in to do the audition, and he had come in from Queens or whatever, and he had a cabbie. And he goes, I've been thinking about this, and I just had a cabbie, and I kind of want to do it as him because he seemed like a real character, and that was the character. And they like Norman said, we looked at each other like, yeah, that'll work. And that was how the genesis of that character came. Yeah, those moments are like just incredible. And he also said that Carol O'Connor was very like not secure about a lot of what he was doing on that show. You know, it was because, you know, partly because he was a performer and also like, you know, just you're trying new stuff. And I said to him, you know, like, did you realize how much you were part of the American consciousness and the dialogue? He goes, well, we just came out of the 60s and we knew that there were these things we wanted to talk about, and I don't think they set out to like, oh, I'm going to change the world or whatever, you know.
But Norman did, man. He that was an amazing show. I love this. Yeah, I grew up on All in the Family and Don Rickles and people just being brutally honest about everything.
Right.
Whether it was entertainment or not, they were still brutally honest. And I loved it.
And those conversations are happening. The problem is that people want to pretend like they're not happening. And I say that you're more racist if you act like you're not saying those
things. I agree.
I mean, I just see certain people, and I immediately stereotype. And, you know, it's sort of like, it's partly a joke, but it's true, too.
Yeah.
And they do sort of apply. You know, there is sort of a, you know, like I joke, my wife's a WASP. Well, her parents, you know, are divorced, and my parents aren't because they've been yelling at each other, and their parents weren't. And so maybe if her parents, you know what I mean? Like, there's this thing that happens that, and nobody wants to just sort of cop to it because everybody wants to gloss over the uncomfortable stuff.
Which I don't. I love, let's expose that bullshit. Let's get it out there.
Well, trust me, a lot of people are uncomfortable around you. I know that.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny you were talking about
especially
that,
your
Carol.
Family.
Yeah, well, my wife.
You show up, this asshole again? All right, come on in.
She's on leave from the family right now. She's fucking around in Florida somewhere.
It's a great story. She lands 4 hours, oh, yeah. Hasn't been to the house.
Like she sends me a text message. We've landed at Palm Beach International. I said, okay, that's great. So I get the message. I call her 4 hours later. You at the house? No, we haven't made it there yet. I'm like, what? Well, I stopped and got a manicure and a pedicure, and we had a couple of cocktails, and then we went, had a little dinner. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I want to be you.
Yeah, well, I do have a great wife. My wife is magnificent.
What does she bring to this that you, what does she, my wife brings like a balance. What does she bring to it?
But that is it. Hmm. That's it completely. My wife, I adore my wife.
Because you're like me, you're volatile and whatever. Like,
Yeah.
You're not a guy that's,
She has seen me do things. She's a very patient woman, but she's a very, and I mean this with all the sincerity in the world, and I don't mean it as an insult. My wife is a tough broad. I love tough broads, man.
Yeah.
My mother was. My wife is.
Why? What do you like about a tough broad?
Would you like to hang around with a dish rag? Oh, Paul, whatever you want to do, you'd fucking go cry. Yeah. I know you. You'd lose your mind.
That's true.
And I would. What?
I can. Whatever you want to do.
Dish rag. Oh, fuck. You know what I'm saying? Whether it's a man or a woman.
Yeah.
No, I mean, some pussy-ass guy. And by the way, pussy short for pusillanimous. It has nothing to do with female genitalia. It's short for pusillanimous. It's a real word. Look it up. So
look
when
this
I
high school educated
fucking
kid with this $15 word. Look
at you. $15, exactly. But, yeah, she's just, I can do whatever the hell I want. My wife does whatever she wants. I do whatever the hell I want. But when we're together at night, it's kind of a coincidence because we like the same people, we like the same humor, we like the same television, and it's not planned.
Why is she a tough broad? Is her upbringing difficult or?
No. She's bohemian and they're not that bright. No. No, honey, I hope you don't listen. No, she just, the first date I ever went on with my wife, I met, she was, well, first of all, she was answering phones as a college student at my attorney's office. Oh. And I was the largest client of the law firm. He did family law, the whole deal, right? So I walk in and I see this really cute, she was 21, I was 29, and I'm a hypocrite because there's no fucking way I'd let a 29-year-old date my daughter when she's 21.
Exactly.
No way.
Exactly. Right.
So I'm a hypocrite and I understand that. But I walk in and I see that she's very cute and all the rest of it. She goes, may I help you? And I said, yeah, would you tell Mr. Dorfman that Uncle Tom is here? And she goes, Mr. Dorfman, Uncle Bob is here. And I said, it's Tom. She goes, yeah, whatever.
Whoa.
It was the greatest.
Nice.
I said, I'm in love with this woman.
Nice.
First date I ever go on her. I'm with her. She said, let's go roller skating. I grew up in North Minneapolis. I don't know how to fucking roller skate.
You want me to put a dress on too, lady?
Yeah, exactly. So we're out there inline skating or whatever else.
Oh, God, I wish I had a picture of that.
Oh, it was horrible.
Rollerblade, yeah.
Yeah, rollerblades. There you go. And this very large African-American guy. And, I mean, this guy's built like a fucking house. He comes, and he goes, get out of the way. He yells at us, because somehow we're in the way or whatever. And I just met her now, and she goes, hey, fuck you, to this guy, right? So I go, oh, good, I'm going to get the shit beat out of me by this very large guy. So he comes back, he goes, what'd you say? And she gets like 2 inches from his face, and she goes, don't you ever fucking tell me to get out of your fucking way, asshole.
Whoa.
And the guy just went, okay. And he just skated away. And I just, that's how she.
And then you got a boner and had sex with her right there.
Oh, man, it was. I said,
now,
this
she
is
grew up here in the area?
Yeah, she grew up in Golden Valley where we live now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She got a better life than you.
Yeah, upper middle class.
So that's just in her DNA, man, right?
It just is, yeah. She's got, well, her brothers are all like, 6'5", 6'6". She's got big brothers, the whole deal. But she's got a real.
Did they size you up? Were you like okay with
it? Oh, God, it was unbearable for a while.
Did they think you were a guy from the wrong side of the tracks?
I'm 29 from the wrong side of the tracks. She's 21, the baby of the family. So there's three older brothers and an older sister. Now all of a sudden, the baby of the family, and here's a guy coming around going, hey, what's up? and they're suburban.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, there,
Hey, let me ask you a question, man. What's for dinner, bitch?
You dish rag.
Yeah, you're kind of a dish rag. You
that's
know?
A great line.
That's a great term. I'm
stealing that line. Yeah. That's
and
great.
And again, it doesn't matter if it's a woman who's a dish rag or a man.
Fuck
who's
it,
a dish
you don't have to say that on my show. It's, we're talking about women who are fucking pussies. There.
Yeah, fucking pussy-ass women.
Yeah.
Pusillanimous. I might use that name, Pusillanimous Renard.
You should have a pusillanimous moment on your show.
Like, yeah, I like that.
A recurring segment.
Here's pusillanimous. Yeah, I like that. We could do that.
Oh, man. If you ever need a guest host for a week, I'll come out and do it. I love doing
your show. You have to go. First of all.
I would fly out, and I'll stay at your hotel. I'll stay at your house.
You can stay. But there's plenty of room because the kids moved out. So, you know.
Oh.
I would, honest to God, what's so great about you is Paul came in this week, like you said, at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy. Great club. And he comes in to do the morning show. And you stood up for about 90% of it. We're on the fucking radio, and he's standing up.
Because I get agitated.
Because he gets all agitated and gets whipped up.
I get all whipped up, yeah.
But you and I, when we see one another, it's like I just saw you two.
5 minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm very free and relaxed around you off stage, but off mic. But on the show, you know, when you're performing, like you're performing, you're on. And then when you're doing some of these shows, like, you know, people may or may not know, you fly in the night before and then you do a bunch of press for a couple of days. So you're kind of on. And it's like the only show where I just feel like I don't have to be on. Like I can just be me. I don't have to worry about what I say. And like
no,
there's a yin and the yang with you, like where I feel like we can complete each other's sentences. This is getting really gay right now.
It really is.
I feel like
that's true. It really
I feel like
is.
Such a fag.
You know, I'm very lucky though because I met you and became great friends. Nick DiPaolo became great friends. He's a guy though. Nick is unfucking believable.
He's like every guy I grew up with.
Yes. Yeah, he absolutely.
Yeah, fucking like he's just yeah.
Well, he comes on the KQ Morning Show 2 weeks ago now. And we're on live radio and he starts saying shit about people. That just they threatened to protest at his show because of shit that he said on my show, right? But they don't understand. That's just that's Nick being Nick. The first time I ever had dinner with Nick DiPaolo many years ago, I ordered this bottle, a really good bottle of wine. He goes, Bernard, what are you doing? I said, well, have a little wine. He goes, how much is that fucking bottle of wine? I said, I don't know, $200. You know, that fucking voiceover money's going to run out someday. He's like my dad all of a sudden. I love Nick DiPaolo, but he's a guy who gets in a lot of trouble because he says whatever the hell he wants. But he's working with Louis C.K. and he's doing well.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You know, you reach a point where I think you just go, you know, I don't care. You just want to say what you want to say. You know, the last few nights at the club here, it's like, you know, I talked to a 62-year-old woman last night for 5 minutes about her vagina.
I love that.
And I really have this thing about, like, I think vaginas all look the same. And,
well,
I really do. I think they bounce back. And like your balls are probably dragging right now.
Well, it's getting there, yeah.
Yeah, so, and my point is, like, you should be able to say things to people from a stand-up stage that they don't think you can say, because otherwise then it's just, it's no different than what you would say to your friends at a bar, and I'm supposed to bring something else to the table.
Right.
And I think that's the way Nick looks at things, too, where you're sort of like, It's not making people uncomfortable just for the sake of making them uncomfortable, but saying it regardless if it makes people uncomfortable.
And that, to me, is you're making them feel alive, actually.
Well, yeah, because I had that woman come up to me. She had a third knee surgery, arthroscopic surgery. She's a 62-year-old woman in a wheelchair, but not, you know, just temporarily. She said, and her daughter was with her. She goes, my mom had the greatest time and blah, 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 and this and that, and it's the same thing with older people. Like, people don't sort of engage them in a way like that.
You're absolutely.
You know, she's not, and not 62 is not old at all, but, like, you know, as you get older, you don't feel that age. I think we all feel generally like we're still in our 20s and 30s, and, you know. And, like, so, I mean, my feeling is we had a lesbian last night. Had her come on stage. She starts talking about it. And I said to her, do you miss Dick? No, that's.
A
I mean,
Dick Cavett?
If she had said that, I would have passed out. That a 22-year-old lesbian would have known a Dick Cavett reference. I would have sucked somebody's dick right there.
Yeah, that's it. But that's a great question.
And I meant that not. I mean, in part to be funny, but I really am always curious. And she goes, no. I go, then why do you lesbians use strap-on dildos? Because you must want that thing in. It's not the same as a finger.
That's a good question.
She goes, well, because I like to be the one giving the dildo. And then she started going like that. So she's the one that like puts the dick in her partner. And we got in, and then she showed me how she what she does with her tongue, and one thing led to another. Oh. And then we had this, and then I took a picture with her to get her girlfriend all jealous.
Oh, and that was another picture he's got.
And I got, I'm showing you pictures on the fucking on the podcast.
By the way,
and
this ladies and gentlemen, Rick Bronson's House Comedy Tonight. Bring the kids.
Yeah, pretending to do her from behind. That she could show her girlfriend. And I'm posting, I posted that on Facebook. And my point is, like, I think those moments free everybody up to relax.
I do, too.
And just go, wow, okay, this guy's not an asshole, but he's honest. And that's the thing with you. I think that you're not, everybody knows the reason you're so successful is you're not an asshole, but you are honest. And you're, like, the voice.
Yeah, I do mean this.
You're the voice of people that sort of, that you that people need to say things that they think or want to say.
You know, one of the things that you asked me earlier, why do some people hate me? From day one, I've really supported law enforcement. And people don't like that when you support law enforcement.
Really? I thought it was the opposite.
Well, hopefully it's getting to that point. But, you know, we have all the situation now. And in Minneapolis, there's an ongoing situation where a young black guy was shot. And you know, one side says this happened, the other side said that happened, and they got the whole thing's a goddamn disaster. Mm. But yeah, supporting law enforcement, even back at the very beginning, I would get calls from you going, "What the fuck? I mean, what's your deal?" Mm. But my mother's family, and again, my mother was my model because she was the one there, she was the one working, and you know, my mother told me, by the way, that I was the first person that ever told her that I loved her.
What?
Her parents never did. My father never told my mother he loved her. Jeez. I said, "Love you, Mom." And she said, "You know, you're the first person that's ever told me that." And she's all tearing up and shit.
Wow.
So I had this great relationship with her. And her family was either cops or criminals. That's just how they were.
That's awesome.
I mean, I think I told you the story about the insurance guy. I got some life insurance, you know, a few years ago. Mm. And so they were interviewing me about, you know, lineage and all that bullshit. Okay, your mother's family. Is your mother alive? No, she died. How old was she? 87, so died of natural causes. Did she have any family members? Yeah, she had brothers. Okay, how about the oldest brother? Oh, the oldest brother, he died relatively young. He unfortunately had cancer. Okay, how about next? I said, well, yeah, her brother Augie. Well, how old was he when he died? Well, he was 39. Well, how'd he die? Somebody threw him off a roof, right? Because that's what happened to my Uncle Augie. And I loved my Uncle Augie.
Wow.
And then we got to Ed, who got hit in the head with a fucking pipe, and he died. And then the third one died. And by the time I got to the third family member that had been murdered, the guy says to me, "Jesus Christ, your mother's family pissed somebody off." But that was it. But on the other side, like her cousin Lamont, which is a great name, isn't it? Lamont Dean.
White guy?
White guy, yeah, absolutely.
Get out of here.
He was a deputy sheriff of Hennepin County.
Ain't no way that Lamont's a white guy.
Hey, pull over. How great Lamont is. Lamont would be kind of like my second cousin, I guess, now. Lamont's like just one of the greatest guys ever. And he was a deputy sheriff of Hennepin County. And one time he's going at that same corner, Plymouth and Emerson. Mm-hmm. He's rolling through the ghetto because he used to live in the suburb just north of North Minneapolis. He's rolling through, and a guy walks up because he was plain clothes at the time, unmarked car. Guy walks up, opens the door, and sits down. And Lamont reaches into his coat, pulls his gun, puts the gun to the guy's head, and goes, "What do you want?" But that's what I grew up around. First time I ever met Lamont, I was 4 years old, and this big, giant guy, and he was a Minneapolis cop at that time, walks up in full uniform, and he goes, "Take me to your mother." I'm like, "What did I do?" He goes, "I said, take me to your mother." It scared the shit out of me.
Oh, that's great.
But it all worked out in the end.
But law enforcement was a big part of your family for good and for bad.
And criminals.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up around criminals. Yeah. You know, there were some in my family. My Uncle Augie. I hope I'm not taking up all your time, but my Uncle Augie, the same guy that was thrown off the roof.
Why was he? What happened? Do we know?
Nobody ever knew.
Was he sort of a little bit of this, a little bit of that?
He never had a job, but he had a woman that drove him around.
There you go. It's like my cousin Bob.
Yeah, same story.
The money shows up somewhere. Don't ask.
This is the kind of stuff that I grew up with. My Uncle Augie came to my seventh birthday. He said, "Tommy, I'm going to give you the greatest." I was seven.
Yeah.
My seventh birthday. He said, Tommy, I'm going to give you the greatest birthday gift you're ever going to get your whole life. And I'm like, excited as shit, right? So I open all my gifts. I got a Daisy BB gun and whatever. All right. I got all this bullshit. And I got seven silver dollars from my godmother because I grew up Catholic, you know, whatever. So I get seven silver dollars from her. And I get nothing from Augie. There's no gift from Augie at all. So the party's wrapping up and everybody's going home. And he comes to me and goes, hey, Tommy. This is the guy, by the way, he asked me what time it was once, so I used to call on the telephone and get the time of day and the temperature, right?
Wait, so, wait, he would call you to get the time of day?
No, no, here you would call here. If you want to know what time it was, you could call this number.
Oh, okay.
I can remember the number, actually. It was 3395,000. You would call that number and tell you what the time and the temperature, yeah. right? So, and I said, and now I'm like four. So he said, what time is it? So I called time and temp, and I go, thank you, and I hang up and goes, what'd you tell her thank you for? And I said, well, I just, you know, thought it'd thank you. It's a recording. Tell her to go fuck herself. Because I'm like 4 years old, right? So now Uncle Augie's at my party. He's giving me nothing. He says he's going to give me the greatest gift of my life.
Yeah.
So he goes, oh, Tommy, I got to go home. He says, Dolores was the name of the woman that drove him around. He says, Dolores, get the car. I'm going to give Tommy his gift now. I said, okay. So Dolores leaves to go get the car, and it's just Augie and me. He goes, I'm going to give you the greatest gift you're ever going to get now. What did you get? I said, I got a BB gun. He goes, let me see the BB gun. He looks at it and puts it down. He looks at this, that, the other thing. What else you get? I said, well, I got seven silver dollars from my godmother. He goes, let me see him. So I hand him the seven silver dollars. He goes, this is your gift. Puts them in his pocket. And he goes, don't ever fucking give people your money. And he never gave it back.
Are you serious?
That's a true story. I never got the money back.
Did you throw him
off
the roof?
Yeah, it was me. Many years later, I threw him off the fucking roof.
That's a great story.
Isn't that a wonderful story? I would have let, he said, don't you ever give your money to people.
Were you upset, though?
I was like, what the hell? You know, my $7 is gone.
So basically, the rest of his life, he's going to people, go fuck yourself, and well, I'm keeping my money.
That was the deal. I mean, he was, because he's like 6'3", probably about 220, really handsome fucker.
But don't you think all of this is contributes to your success?
No doubt about it.
And I go this way. Tough upbringing. You see your mother sweating for money. Don't want to be that person. Want to do good for your mom. Great core basis of motivation.
Yep.
Your Uncle Augie taking your money, teaching you hard-ass lessons.
Yeah.
So when you get into business, regardless of what the business is, life kind of sucks and people are assholes, particularly entertainment and radio, where it can be backstabbing and, you know, they love you one day and then the ratings go away and they hate you the next. And you got to be a tough negotiator and a tough ass, hard ass to make it through.
Yeah, that's true.
To
that's very
being one of the biggest radio personalities in the country for 30 years. All of that. If you had led a more charmed life, I don't think you'd be as successful. Because it's certainly not your talent that got you here.
Well, there's no question. That's a given. And
No. I mean that. And all joking aside, like I think that those tough
fucker
moments.
Fucker Paul.
No, not the talent part. The part of the toughness, like you know what I mean? Like if it were an easier life for you, you wouldn't.
No, you. First of all, it's kind of like somebody once described it as being a hockey goalie. Because every week the ratings come out. Every week they come out. And a hockey goalie once described the worst job in the world because if somebody scores on you, a red light flashes, a horn goes off, and the crowd boos the shit out of you. And I go through that every Tuesday when the ratings come out, right? But luckily, we've had a 30-year run. We're still in first place after all
that
time.
How do you not how do you get used to that weekly? Because that's the same thing with me with stand up like you're only as good as your last show.
That's very.
And you do worry like, well, maybe this is the one where it's not going to go so great. And they always go fine, but the worry never goes away.
No, there's no question about
it. So even to this day,
that comes
in your head.
Because someday, although I think I'm kind of fortunate, just because of when I was born, that I was talking to the president of the bank I've been doing business with for years. He's a very good friend of mine, and we're talking about. He said, you know what's amazing. You and radio are going to die on the same day. And it's not because you're the supreme talent. It's just you're the right age that when you die, radio will be over.
Here's the thing that is very unique about you. How old are you?
64.
Okay. I know guys who've been doing radio for as long as you have.
Mm-hmm.
And they play their age. And I'm not saying you're not playing your age, but you remain hip. Like you can connect with a young comic. You're not like this old fuddy-duddy radio guy who was hip 30 years ago, but then like stays in that sort of era, you would not, like, if you didn't see you wouldn't know that you were a 64-year-old guy talking to a 23-year-old black comic who just came through town. Your references, you're on top of shit. And not that you're studying, you've just remained hip for 30 years, which I'm telling you, I do this all over the country and some of the biggest shows in the country. Not a lot of guys have been able to do that.
I think the reason for that is it was never real in the first place. This is just, it's me. And it was me at the beginning, and it'll be me at the end.
Yeah, but what's cool about you is that you stay cool and current. Like, some people stay like, well, you know, the 70s were better. And then like, they always just want to, like, be that guy in the 70s when they were 25. But you're not that. You're just current, and it's very unique for somebody who...
Is it really? See, I don't know that.
It is.
I didn't know it was.
It is. Like, I go on some radio shows, and it's sort of, or even TV, and it's sort of like, there's a dated quality to the person.
Yeah, I could see that.
Not the age that dates them. It's because I'm not an ageist. Yeah. It's just the way that they talk and look at things and references that they make. It's just they're not like, but you're like, you're on it. You're, you know, you know, you're podcasting, you know, guys, a lot of people 64.
They thought I was crazy to do that. Yeah, they did. They thought I was crazy to get into business. I always want to be. I want to be on the radio till the day I die. Mm. And I want to do podcasting now till the day I die. I don't want to sit around and look. And you know what else happened? Fuck that.
No.
The fact that I get to do this, that you called me and said, hey, let's do a show, I love it because I will reach people that have never heard of me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'll get exposure to people. I don't know who the hell that is.
Yeah.
You know? I love that challenge because some of them are going to go, what the fuck do you have him on for?
I can't believe that, though. You're so likable. I mean,
there's no
question. It doesn't come. No, I mean, put your pants back on, you fucking creep.
I'll get it done.
Well, you know, I love you. It's the
best. I love you too, pal. And this is, again, this is not bullshit. It's not, you know, radio or television or showbiz in any way. I wouldn't tell you that unless I felt that way.
No, I know.
From day one, you and I have gotten...
We just connected, and that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't, really.
It was like what happened with my wife. I saw her, and I'm like, I'm going to fuck her in the ass. That's the first
thing. You thought that about me?
I thought that about you, too.
Oh, great.
I'm going to fuck that white-haired bastard in the ass.
Boy, look at the time.
We got to go to break. traffic and weather on the ones. This is Tom Bernard, KQRS Morning Show. If you're in the Minneapolis area and you don't turn it on, you're a pussy. And I mean the hairy thing that's around the woman's legs. It's the Tom Bernard Podcast, which you go to TomBernardShow.com, correct?
Ooh, very good, sir.
And it's at Tom Bernard Show is your Twitter?
Which I don't know. I haven't been on Twitter in 3 years.
Okay, then fuck the Twitter.
I ran out of ways to tell people to go fuck themselves. So I don't go on.
You're better off. So exactly. The podcast is every day. It's phenomenal. It's got his daughter, Alex, and Mike, and Andy, and his daughter, Catherine. His wife, Catherine, the hard-ass daughter. He's fucking his daughter.
Jesus. I told you I grew up Catholic.
Exactly. All right. Love you, man. Tom Bernard, TomBernardShow.com, and KQRS Morning Show. And he's going to be national soon, so watch out. All right. That was my good buddy, Tom Bernard. Man, I could talk to him all day. He's so fun. Big guy, too. You get him mad, he'll punch you and your mother. He's a great guy. Please come see me November 25th and 26th, Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. Use the promo code Paul. Go to GothamComedyClub.com. Use the promo code Paul. You get half off tickets. 5 shows, November 25th and 26th. And send the links around, folks. We want to keep this building the podcast. As you know, free subscription. Tell your friends. And please review the podcast. It's always good for me on iTunes. All right. See you next week.